and see it clearly. It's a war, but it's not a war. It's an excursion. We've already won, but we haven't won. We'll be home in a week, but we might be there for months. We're going to change the regime, but we don't need to change the regime. They've got a nuclear capability, but we destroyed their nuclear capability 9 months ago. They might get a nuclear capability, but there's no way they're going to get a nuclear capability. We need to keep the Strait of Hormuz open. We don't need to keep the Strait of Hormuz open. We need your help, but we don't need your help. Send an aircraft carrier. Don't send an aircraft carrier. We don't need your help, but if you don't send your help, we're going to attack you and insult you. And in fact, even if you do send help, we're going to attack you and insult you because we are Donald Trump. A deranged liar.
He is correct. He is deranged. And a liar.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me. Jokers to the right. Here I am.
Yes, I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast. As heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA, 98.7 in Santa Barbara, 93.7 in San Diego, 99.5 FM in Ridgecrest and China Lake. Also in California, in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI and Round Mountains, KKRN. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO, Eugene's KEPW, Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU, in Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York's WRFZ, down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Richmond, Virginia's WRWK, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950, KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internets, on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, Delmarva FM, and most of your favorite podcast sites. Blanketing Planet Earth, I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-round swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today. Welcome to another thrilling edition of the Bradcast. Quote, blessed are the peacemakers, Jesus Christ once supposedly said. Quote, good, I'm glad he's dead, said our deranged, demented, depraved, degenerate president of the United States over the weekend about an American war hero and lifelong public servant just before going on to threaten the lives of some 92 million people in Iran. No wonder the Christians love that guy, because blessed are the peacemakers. Donald Trump is most decidedly not one of them. On Saturday evening, Trump announced on his failing social media site, quote, if Iran doesn't fully open without threat, the Strait of Hormuz within 48 hours from the exact point in time, from this exact point in time, the United States of America will hit and obliterate their various power plants, starting with the biggest one first. That, of course, would be a war crime, or should I say yet another war crime by this president and his administration, not that he seems to care. But by Monday, with markets likely to plummet and oil prices shooting through the roof just hours before the supposed deadline, Trump did what he always seems to do when the rubber meets his wannabe strongman brinkmanship. He tacoed. He chickened out. For now, pushing his supposed deadline off for 5 days before he attacks some 92 million people in Iran. Thereafter, on Monday, after days of the stock market getting pummeled and oil prices continuing to fall, near the end of our third week of Trump's war against Iran last week, stock prices recovered some of their losses on Monday, and oil fell, at least for now, to just below $100 a barrel last time I checked. Still, an increase of more than 40% over what it was before Donald Trump and Israel launched their newest unlawful war of choice. Trump claimed when canceling his Monday night deadline for attacking civilian energy infrastructure in Iran that it was because the U.S. was now in productive talks with Iran regarding their enriched uranium, even as Iran denies any such talk. Which of those two is the biggest liar? Well, you make the call. If time allows, we'll try to open up the phones a little bit later this hour to our live Southern California listening audience or those listening anywhere live across the globe via the kpfk.org web stream at 818-985-5735. That's 818-985-KPFK. Write it down. If you have any thoughts on that question or any of the other issues that we do hope to get to today, line up now if you like. Just before vowing to obliterate the Iranian power sector, Donald Trump, hell of a guy, responded to the death of Robert Mueller at the age of 81, announced on Saturday. Mueller was a decorated Vietnam veteran. He went on to serve both Republican and Democratic administrations alike in the fraught years following 9/11 as the FBI director before later heading up the independent special counsel investigation of Russian interference into Donald Trump's 2016 election. Said our president on Saturday, after the news of Mueller's death had broke, again, he said on his failing social media site, quote, "Robert Mueller just died. Good. I'm glad he's dead." He added, quote, "He can no longer hurt innocent people." And then, of course, just hours later, Donald Trump went on to threaten to obliterate the power supply for some 92 million people in Iran. And by the way, the drinking water along with it, as the desalination plants would be knocked out at the same time. There is much more today. Unfortunately, while we'll try to get to some of it later, along with your calls at 818-985-KPFK, there was still more news that broke late last week that I want to make sure does not get entirely buried under the rubble of our insane president's rhetoric and his wars today. Late last week, Donald Trump's wildly corrupted Federal Communications Commission released its order formally approving what good government nonprofit Public Knowledge describes as the illegal $6.2 billion Nexstar Media Group Tegna merger, despite the proposal exceeding both the 39% national ownership cap and local market limits. We'll discuss what all of that actually means in a moment. If the deal closes, according to Public Knowledge, local news will suffer due to job cuts and more of what Americans see and hear will be controlled by powerful, consolidated corporate media behemoths. It's times like this that I hope our listeners thank the radio gods for the independent media of Pacifica Radio and the all of the stations who carry the broadcast and other shows like it. Attorneys general from eight states have now asked a federal judge to halt the merger between these two companies, two of the largest local broadcast station owners in the U.S. The Trump administration approved the merger on Thursday after the FCC waived the rules limiting any company from owning stations that, taken together, reach more than 39% of U.S. households. The merger was approved after Nexstar aligned itself with the Trump administration by temporarily pulling Jimmy Kimmel Live off the air across its 28 ABC affiliate stations last year after Trump's corrupt FCC chair Brendan Carr threatened to revoke the licenses of broadcasters airing Kimmel. Last week, it appears, the company was rewarded for that effort in response to Carr's attempt to violate First Amendment free speech rights over our public airwaves. In addition to the suit by the attorneys general, Public Knowledge had previously joined with United Church of Christ Media Justice Ministry, Free Press, and the Communications Workers of America in filing a petition to deny the merger with the FCC, arguing that the FCC has no legal authority to approve this transaction. Several U.S. senators have also urged the FCC to, quote, block the deal if it is determined that it violates federal telecommunications or antitrust laws. John Bergmeier, legal director at Public Knowledge, in a statement released by the group late last week, said, quote, "The FCC's approval of the Nexstar-Tegna merger is a betrayal of the agency's legal obligations and the public it is supposed to serve." Joining us now to explain all of this and what it means for our public airwaves and what we, the people who are supposed to be, you know, protected by the FCC against this sort of thing, well, joining us now is John Bergmeier, legal director at the D.C.-based Public Interest Group, working to defend consumer rights in the emerging digital culture. Oh, John Bergmeier, sir, welcome back to the broadcast.
Thank you for having me. That's quite an introduction you gave me there.
Well, now you have to live up to it, John. So we'll see how it goes. I don't think we've spoken to you since the earliest days, if I recall, of the Trump administration last year, when we discussed threats that Trump and his new FCC chair would pose to the broadcast networks, pretty much all of which have now come to pass in one way or another, John. But never mind the FCC approved takeover of CBS by the top Trump supporter and donor who heads up Paramount Skydance, or the various threats to revoke broadcast licenses from local stations owned by the networks. This approval for the combination of two of the largest local station-owning corporations, if I'm understanding it correctly, seems to present its own sort of threat to constitutional freedom of expression of the public airwaves that is a lot harder to notice, not to mention a violation of the simple rule of law that appears to be utterly ignored by Carr and the FCC here. First, what are we talking about? Just literally, as far as station ownership and the power it gains them, what does it mean when these two huge companies, Nexstar and Tegna, are combined into one with a collective ownership of something like 265 full power local broadcast stations around the country?
Yeah, I'm not. There's maybe they required six divestitures, which isn't much and doesn't address the 39% cap. But I think the key to understanding this is a lot of people just really don't understand how the broadcast market works. Like, they see they have a Fox station, an ABC station, and they're like, oh, that's Fox, that's ABC.
Right.
And in some cases, it is. There's owned and operated stations that are literally owned by the network. But a lot of these broadcast stations, you know, they used to be local, semi mob and pop esque businesses. They've been swooped up into these giant nationwide chains. And the reason why I think sometimes it's hard, you know, just to communicate about them is that in one town, it might be the Fox affiliate. And then the next town over, a company like Nexstar might be the ABC affiliate. Mm-hmm. They'll have different network programming for the different networks they're on. But like, the local news might be pretty similar from one town to the next, the local programming, the local content. And that really is like a huge major concern. Nexstar already has a track record of purchasing other broadcast chains and then just shutting down newsrooms, creating news at these like central hubs and just sending it around, where it's like at most very lightly customized for the local market. Mm-hmm. And that just is obviously problematic for a number of reasons, in part because, you know, these are very ideological companies that have a very firm conservative point of view. Of course, that's their constitutional right, but people should be able to have an option to access, you know, more diverse points of view from a diverse set of owners.
And a lot of that has to do with, or is the reason for, this 39% cap that is supposedly in place. Explain this to me. How is it even possible for the FCC to ignore that supposed statutory limit to give what control of stations reaching 80% of Americans' households now, giving that control to one single company? Is there some sort of legal loophole? Tell me about that 39% cap and how they seem to be working around it in this particular case.
Yeah, I would say there's two legal issues, and there's actually several lawsuits already filed against this deal. So just to put that to the side, the state attorneys general, they're suing on just pure antitrust ground.
Okay.
Right? This is just a merger that violates our antitrust laws. Others, a coalition of broadband companies, and I can announce, because it just came out like 10 minutes ago, Public Knowledge is also suing. in a different court, and we're bringing up more of the communications law arguments.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the FCC, there have been various ownership limits and cross ownership restrictions in place from the FCC in Congress for a number of years, where it's supposed to say you can't own too many stations in one single market, mm-hmm. you can't own a combination of stations that amounts to a certain percentage of viewers. There's even rules in place where the same company couldn't own both, say, like the newspaper and the radio station in town. And the idea was all about just like promoting media diversity. These rules have been hollowed out for decades, and there isn't really much left of them. And for most of them, the FCC does have the authority to waive them. But this one, they just don't. The 39% number was mm-hmm. set like basically by negotiated in Congress between Republicans and Democrats, and it was taken out of the realm of policies that the FCC has the authority to waive or to modify.
Just to make sure I understand it, the 39% cap means no one company can own 39% of the stations? Is that in any one market? Is that around the country? What is that?
It's 39? Nationwide.
Nationwide.
It's a nationwide cap, and it's about sort of basically controlling access to 39% of viewers.
And so we're going from 39% of viewers as the max up to now
households
up to allowing for one company to control 80% or reach 80% of American households.
Correct. That's about the reaches. And it's obviously different than like market share, because there's still other stations in those mm-hmm. markets. But yes, that's a reach which is much higher than they're legally allowed to do. You know, obviously there's legal arguments on both sides. I just happen to think that the legal argument that the FCC has put forward is pretty weak, and I'm really not the only one. I mean, because it's not just, progressive nonprofits here. It's, major cable and mm-hmm. pay TV companies are suing. They have very high caliber lawyers explaining to the courts very carefully why this is illegal. And even former Republican FCC Commissioner Michael O'Reilly has been pretty vocal that he believes that he doesn't agree with the cap as policy, but he specifically thinks that the FCC does not have the authority to waive it. He's not in office anymore, and the current occupant of the chairman of the FCC mm-hmm. Is not particularly concerned about these legal niceties.
And so some of this is law, some of this is rules. In theory, the FCC can waive, I guess, both the rules and the law that there's a facility in there for them to do that. But presumably they have to offer a reason and an explanation for doing so. And the challenge that you're noting here, that Public Knowledge is suing, is it based on basically the idea that, sure, you can waive these rules when you need, but you have to give, an appropriate reason for doing so?
Yeah, so typically when the FCC, it's a commission of commissioners, and mm-hmm. they're the ones who decide things. The FCC also has the authority to sort of like delegate things down to a bureau, things that are sort of like relatively routine or non-controversial. And then if you disagree with them, you can appeal those bureau-type decisions up to the commission. In mm-hmm. this case, this major, major broadcast transaction that represents, if it's holds up, like a serious change to the structure of the market, mm-hmm. as well as pushing some really legally questionable theories, was just done at the bureau level. The commission didn't even take it up.
Really?
Right.
Yeah, go ahead.
And in part, this is because, the state of the commission is not, great. The FCC typically used to be considered an independent agency with five mm-hmm. commissioners. We currently only have three. Chairman Carr says he's not independent. In fact, this deal was a foregone conclusion as soon as President Trump announced that he supported it. Just realizing that he might not even have the votes necessarily at the commission level. And for a while, they didn't even have a quorum. He's just having things done by, underlings, essentially.
Essentially fiat, telling him this is what we want to have done, and it's done. And the commission, was there even debate among the commissioners, public debate, discussion about any of this, or is just Brendan Carr now gives the okay for everything?
I mean, there's been public statements, and lots of advocates went in to the commissioners and their staff, mm-hmm. and even to meet with the Bureau to make their case. But, you know, it seems to have been a foregone conclusion.
In the statement from Public Knowledge that you guys put out on this, you were quoted as charging that consumers will pay the price for this. How so? Why is it important to have media diversity as you see it at all? I mean, these companies, they're serving us well. They're giving us program 24/7 around the clock. Why is it so important for us to have these differing point of views as you see it at Public Knowledge?
Well, one reason would be so that, you know, different points of view such as ours can get out there, and so we're not totally shut out from, you know, speaking to local media because uh-huh. they don't agree with our point of view. But a part of it is like a lot of news just like is local, and like you really can't expect the national. The national media to cover issues like broadband, mm-hmm. you know, how is broadband deployment working in some rural county? Mm-hmm. You know, how are these state funds being dispersed? You know, that's like the bread and butter of local news. And I think, you know, a healthy democracy really depends on that. And I think the Pacifica audience, you know, mm-hmm. understands this very well. But there's also just like a financial argument too. Once these companies are joined together, they can basically go to the cable companies and the satellite companies that pay to carry broadcast stations and basically have a tougher negotiating position. They could say, look, if you don't, you know, double what we're going to be paid, you know, this year, we're going to black you out across like the Eastern Seaboard, you know, just making up examples.
Yeah,
here.
Yeah, yeah.
But it gives them a lot of leverage to extract higher fees from cable companies. Oh, what do I care if cable companies have to pay more? Well, people are paying for that, and,
right.
and it's not just cable, it's also obviously satellite, and you know, newer services like YouTube TV are, mm-hmm. are part of this as well.
And so with prices already skyrocketing in recent years for everyone who still has cable or satellite TV, or as you say, YouTube TV, which now carries these local stations as well, we can all expect then to pay more thanks to this merger. I mean, isn't the FCC supposed to protect the American consumers as opposed to the corporations, John Bergmeier?
Yes, that is actually, they very specifically are supposed uh-huh. to regulate the rates of retransmission consent, just because it's a very strange market. You know, mm-hmm. you're a local broadcaster, you have a monopoly over the, you know, you have a government license. And, you know, for a lot of these reasons, it's always been very heavily regulated, and it's been designed to, you know, protect consumers formal. So I'm not saying the FCC has ever done a particularly great job of it, but at least, you know, they made an effort. They put in window dressing.
Yes.
Right. And in this case, if you read the Media Bureau's order, at one point they basically say, we don't think that this retransmission consent issue is even a big deal at all. Why are you talking about it? But then later in that same order, there is like, oh, and by the way, they've agreed to not raise rates until after November. So they basically agreed to pause rate hikes until after the midterms.
Yeah. Oh, how thoughtful. So they're not going to raise rates for a few months. In the meantime, you guys have also said that Nexstar is actually telling Wall Street, you know, during their, you know, their quarterly calls or whatever it is, about 45% of the $300 million in expected, quote, synergies, which will come from this retransmission consent revenue. Yeah. So they're saying we are going to raise $300 million on this, and that is $300 million that's coming out of the consumers' pockets.
Right. You can make some money by firing journalists and shuttering newsrooms.
Sure.
But to make up the difference, you know, you gotta fleece people.
And those of us who live in cities like Los Angeles, we've already seen the result of some of these past mergers of these broadcast titans, really, where local TV news, which, by the way, is the most trusted in general by the public, where we're seeing this already, this consolidation. We've seen it for years. Two different stations will broadcast essentially the same local news. So this is going to make that problem worse, I presume. How so? I mean, will we see three different local stations all offering the exact same news? Or are we going to see more cities and markets around the country losing more and more local news outlets and choices? What do you expect we're going to see here in practical terms when it comes to local news, John?
I think you're likely to see lots of people in different cities reading from the same script. You know, that's been happening for a long time. And you'll just see, you know, just segments that are just produced at these, you know, regional hubs and shipped around, as opposed to actually being created in the community by people who are community members that, you know, one of the reasons why would local news be trusted? It's like, well, you see those people around, like, you know, they show up at the supermarket opening, you know, they're part of the community. They're not just some distant voice that's beamed in.
And essentially, I mean, I'm wondering what is left after this. You got essentially two huge corporations, the far right, you know, Sinclair and Nexstar. It seems like they'll essentially be controlling everything that Americans are allowed to watch over at least our public airwaves. And how long is it before Sinclair and Nexstar merge to become one? I mean, that's kind of what we're down to, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that's the number one and the number two. I mean, there's still lots of independent stations out there. Some of them don't do news, some of them do. So, you know, I think there's still hope for the broadcast ecosystem. You know, it's not just over. But yeah, I think also I would put this in the context too of like why would Brendan Carr be so motivated to do this? And part of it is that the affiliates, the local stations, are seen as like bulwarks against the networks, which are perceived by many conservatives to be too liberal. I mean, you see that exactly in the Jimmy Kimmel situation where Brendan Carr specifically wants to give the broadcast stations more power where they can just choose to preempt or not carry network programming. You know, they did a trial run of this with Jimmy Kimmel. It sort of backfired on them, I believe. but, you know, this would give them more authority to do more ability to do things like that.
But did you see Nexstar and Tegna stations and their decision to take the Kimmel show off the air amid these threats by Brendan Carr? By the way, for even longer than ABC itself did, you know, because he told essentially a joke that Trump didn't like. Did you see at the time that their willingness to do so, to take him off the air, was sort of a direct effort to curry favor with Carr and Trump and the FCC?
Oh, I think there's no doubt that that Nexstar and Sinclair did it too, and they didn't have a merger through. So, you know, some people are just doing it for the love of the game, I suppose. Mm-hmm. But that was, I believe, September 2025, and that was maybe a month or two after the deal was announced. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I absolutely believe it played a part.
As noted, Public Knowledge was one of several groups who were leading up the opposition to this merger, which, by the way, is it now a done deal other than legal challenges? Is this an announcement from the FCC that's good as gold, doesn't have to go through Congress or anything like that?
Yeah. Late last week, the DOJ cleared it, and then a few hours later the FCC did, and then Nexstar announced that the deal was closed. That doesn't mean you can't unscramble the egg. I mean, almost right away, industry was in court saying, okay, you need to have a stay. Mm-hmm. You know, the idea is, you know, keep the status quo while we can, litigate the merits. So, yeah, I mean, I have no doubt that a lot of their strategy is to just, move fast, make it as impossible to undo as possible, and, you know, hopefully that sways a judge.
And thankfully,
hopefully it doesn't, actually.
Well, right. And hopefully the folks thankfully, folks like Public Knowledge and the attorneys general who seem to be anticipating exactly this have been able to jump in to take action quickly. But, even in the local courts, the lower courts, which have sort of been a bulwark, frankly, over the past year and a half, thank God they're there, those lower courts, really appointees by Republicans and Democrats alike, I think have been saving us in more ways than we all seem to fully appreciate at this point. But there will be lawsuits that move forward. But, you know, given what we have already seen from Donald Trump's corrupted Supreme Court majority, and I suspect that, you know, any victories that might be won at the lower courts are going to make their way up to the Supremes, which seem to believe that executive agencies specifically created by Congress to be independent of the FCC, that those agencies cannot actually be independent of the executive, at least as long as Trump is president. Is there any hope that a favorable ruling in the lower courts would actually withstand the, you know, corporate-friendly, Trump-friendly high court like the one that we currently have, John?
I think this has some legal chance because, you know, we've seen some surprising things, even some pretty conservative judges. I think this 39% cap thing is like really hard to argue about. You know, I'm sure people will try to find a way. And I'd point out that it's not even true that all of conservative media is in favor of this, in part because they are a competitor, I will grant, but Newsmax and their CEO, Chris Ruddy, you know, you don't really get more right-wing than those guys. they've been very vocal in opposition
opposing
to this.
Opposing good.
Yeah, and opposing this because, look, they don't want to see their competitor get big and strong and just sort of, like, ice them out. But also, you know, there's still some semblance of respect for, like, the rule of law.
Is there? We'll find out, I guess. John Bergmeier, really appreciate your insight here on this. Delighted to hear the public knowledge will be taking all of this on in the courts. I hope you'll keep us up to date as this moves forward because, boy, I mean, we've just been watching this now for years as independent station after independent station. You mentioned the mom-and-pop stations. I'm begging the mom-and-pop stations out there, don't sell. Stay independent. Yeah. We need you right now because just for years, it's just, you know, this consolidation in the media from the network side to the, you know, movie studio side, to the cable side, now to the local stations. It's just horrific, and I think we are all the poorer for it, but we are all the richer for public knowledge. You can get more information on their work at publicknowledge.org. You can find them on, I guess, the Blue Sky and Twitter when it's not crashing, as it is much of today, at Public Knowledge. John is their legal director, and delightful, as always, to speak with you, John. Thank you.
Thank you for the help. Thank you so much. Bye.
You bet. All right. Let's take a quick break here. We will come back with some more thoughts. A tiny, teeny, tiny bit of encouraging media news and maybe some other thoughts. And I'd also, of course, love to hear from you at 818-985-5735 on all of this. The importance of independent media, the importance of, frankly, I hope that if nothing else, it serves as another reminder to, you know, support your independent outlets like On the Radio, Pacifica Radio, even the Bradcast, bradblog.com, and so forth, or whatever station you happen to be listening to us on if you're listening on a station. This is for real. This is not a drill. I have to say it week in and week out, but it matters. And it's getting kind of scary out here. 818-985-5735. Give us a call. Also, if you have any thoughts on Trump's latest idiocy out in Iran, his claim that his tacoing on Monday that he is not going to attack the civilian power plants in Iran, at least for 5 days, despite his threat over the weekend, claiming that there are conversations ongoing with Iran that are going really well. The talks are going really well, Desi Doyen. You don't need to worry.
Yeah, but I feel like we should perhaps explain what taco means. Yeah. It's short for Trump always chickens out.
Doesn't everybody know that by now?
In case they don't.
Trump says that he's in a very, very good talk. So we're going to put this the latest obliteration off for 5 days with Iran. Iran says, what? We don't know anything about it. We haven't been talking to this guy. Who is this taco Trump guy you mentioned? We will take a quick break, come back and talk about all of that and more, and take your calls, 818-985-5735. I'm Brad Friedman, and you are listening to The Bradcast.
Hi, this is Desi Doyen from the Green News Report and The Bradcast. What the public hears on the public airwaves matters. At The Bradcast, we do our best to bring you accurate news and analysis on the issues that actually matter, and we do it all independently without corporate or political influence. But we can't do it without you, now more than ever. Please help us stay on your public airwaves by going to bradblog.com/donate to help keep us going. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
No hatred, no violence, no starvation, and no greed, and no kings, no kings, no kings. No lies, no bullets, no bombs, and no need for no kings, no kings, no kings.
No kings indeed.
No walls, no judgments, no oppression, cowering to kings, no kings, no kings.
Welcome back to the broadcast. Brad Friedman every from bradblog.com. Anyone planning to go to one of those huge no kings rallies? The next big rallies taking place in thousands of cities around the country on March 28th. Give us a call. 818-985-5735 is our phone number. Let us know where you are planning to go on Sunday. Did I say welcome back to the broadcast? Brad Friedman from bradblog.com.
I don't know. I think you did, but I believe that it's not on Sunday. I believe the march is on Saturday.
Are you sure?
I believe it is. But
you go look it up.
I will.
All right. See, we got to get our facts straight. Thank you for the fact check. You're right. Saturday, March 28th. Thank God.
You're welcome.
You'd be out there marching alone if you listen to this show for your information. Well done, Desi Doyen. Thank you. We'll get to your phones in a second. It looks like Dave may be thinking about no kings this weekend. In some slightly brighter media-related news today, in the era of wannabe king and successful warmonger, Donald Trump, in a lawsuit brought by the New York Times against the Trump administration and its former Fox News weekend host turned Secretary of Defense, Pete Hegseth, kicking out the entire press corps from the Pentagon after they refused to get Pentagon approval for stories before publication, essentially. Well, U.S. District Judge Paul L. Friedman, no relation, of the D.C. court, struck down the Pentagon's restrictions on journalists as unconstitutional. Yes, as unconstitutional as you probably thought it was. Ruled on Friday, quote, "A primary purpose of the First Amendment is to enable the press to publish what it will and the public to read what it chooses, free of any official proscription." He continued, quote, "Those who drafted the First Amendment believe that the nation's security requires a free press and an informed people, and that such security is endangered by governmental suppression of political speech. That principle has preserved the nation's security for almost 250 years, wrote Judge Friedman. It must not be abandoned now. Once again, the lower federal courts continue to prove to be a bulwark against tyranny in the Trump era. The lower courts, anyway, don't know that we can say the same about the Supreme Court, which heard oral argument on Monday regarding the Republican Party's lawsuit against Mississippi's law that allows for the counting of absentee vote-by-mail ballots that were cast before Election Day but do not arrive until a day or two later. The remarks from the corrupted right-wing majority on the court on Monday suggest that those justices are preparing to prevent such lawfully cast ballots from being tallied, even if they arrive late through no fault of the voter. I hope to talk more about this the Monday hearing and what all of that means on tomorrow's broadcast with our old friend Mark Joseph Stern of Slate. Am I right about that?
Yes, you are. All right, and I just want to point out that with those ballots, there's nothing wrong with them other than that they arrived late.
That
I mean, the voters voted by Election Day.
And they may
postmarked.
Be postmarked that way. As a matter of fact, you can, if you mail your ballot 3 weeks early and for whatever reason, something happens at the post office, for whatever reason, be it nefarious or benign, if it just happens to arrive the day after Election Day, it looks like these far-right, corrupted right-wingers on the Supreme Court are going to go along with Donald Trump and say, nope, you can't count that legally cast ballot. Man, does the Supreme Court need to be reformed. Man, does the U.S. Supreme Court need to be unpacked from years of packing by Republicans. By the way, speaking of old friends, I think the great Heather Digby Parton and Driftglass will also be here this week for another raucous broadcast roundtable panel later in the week. So hope you'll tune in for that as well. 818-985-5735 is our phone number. Anything you'd like to talk about, I'm happy to do it with you. Let's go to Dave in Venice. Hey, Dave, welcome to the broadcast. You going out to No Kings on apparently Saturday, not Sunday?
Yeah. Yes, Brad. How are you?
I'm okay.
Thank you. Thank you, Desi. I just wanted to say, yes, it is Saturday.
Thank you.
You can go to indivisible.com and you can see the map there.
Mm-hmm.
Use your Zoom.
Indivisible.com. You can also go to nokings.org to get information. I mean, literally thousands of rally sites around the country. Are you going to be marching in Venice, Dave?
Yes, we are. We're meeting at the Windward Plaza.
And that, you say we, is that you and some friends? Is that you and the group Indivisible?
I'm sure it's going to be well attended.
Okay. Everyone's going to be there. Thanks, Dave. Good luck. Be careful out there.
Well, that is one of
Raise hell.
Yeah, the geniuses about this particular type of march is that it's scattered around. It's dispersed, so you don't have to travel to one central location. You can go pretty much anywhere that you are when you just look it up. Like there's out in Riverside, down in Santa Monica, down in Venice, just a few miles away. So it does make it possible for more people to participate.
818-985. There we go. 818-985-5735 is our phone number. 818-985-KPFK. Indian News Channel, NDTV, Indian, it's a business news channel, reports today that an Iranian military spokesperson threatened America with retaliatory attacks shortly after Trump had issued his 48-hour ultimatum on Saturday, with the president vowing to commit, yes, more war crimes in Iran by, quote, obliterating their power plants across the country if they refused to open the Strait of Hormuz to one-fifth of the world's supply of oil and gas out of the Persian Gulf. He made that threat on Saturday, giving them 48 hours. Well, shortly after Trump announced on Monday that he is now deferring, quote, any and all strikes on Iranian power plants and energy infrastructure based on productive resolution talks with Iran. Well, Iranian media reports denied any direct or even intermediary communication with Trump or the U.S., wrote Trump on his failing social media site, quote, I am pleased to report that the United States of America and the country of Iran have had over the last 2 days very good and productive conversations regarding a complete and total resolution of our hostilities in the Middle East. But Iran denied all of that, with the Islamic Republic of Iran Broadcasting responding in a social media post, quote, Trump, fearing Iran's response, backed down from his 48-hour ultimatum. Excuse me. Ebrahim Razaya, spokesperson of the National Security and Foreign Policy Commission in Iran, reiterated those claims. He said, quote, Trump and America have backed down again. The field is still charging forward. Another defeat for the devil. Iran's Fars news agency also denied claims of dialogue, stating that Trump retreated due to Iranian threats. Tasnim news media from Tehran alleged that Trump was making these announcements just to trim crude oil prices, once again iterating that no talks for resolutions were held. Trump, on the other hand, when he was asked about Iran's denials of any talks, had this to say outside of the White House, I believe, on Monday.
Mr. President, Iran's foreign ministry says you're not telling the truth when it comes to productive conversations to end the war.
Well, they're going to have to get themselves better public relations people. We have had very, very strong talks. We'll see where they lead. We have major points of agreement. I would say almost all points of agreement. Perhaps that hasn't been conveyed. The communication, as you know, has been blown to pieces. They're unable to talk to each other. But we've had very strong talks. Mr. Witkoff and Mr. Kushner had them. They went, I would say, perfectly. I would say that if they carry through with that, it'll end that problem, that conflict. And I think it'll end it very, very substantially.
It'll end it substantially. The talks went perfectly. I don't know why I wouldn't believe him.
Donald Trump being asked about specifically Iran military news had cited a senior foreign ministry official as saying that, quote, there are no negotiations underway with the United States. Further, the official rejected Trump's claim about ongoing talks, said that Islamic Republic of Iran will not accept any negotiations until, quote, its objectives in the war are achieved, whatever those objectives may be, though they may be clearer than Trump's, who has used seven different ways from Sunday, basically, to explain this attack, which has succeeded largely in sparking a regional conflict without apparent end. A cutoff of a fifth of the world's oil and gas supply from the Persian Gulf, which has sent prices skyrocketing. But hey, at least the claims regarding the Jeffrey Epstein files and the charges within them that Donald Trump sexually assaulted a 13-year-old girl, well, those aren't leading the news quite as frequently. So I guess mission accomplished. By the way, the Epstein estate does appear to have confirmed that there was a previous secret settlement between the estate and the now woman who claimed that she was sexually assaulted by both Epstein and Trump when she was from 13 to 15 years of age, and that Trump was in some way at least a party to that settlement. Huh. 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK. Anyway, back to Iran. An official said on Monday, after Trump backed off his vow to attack Iran's power plants by Monday night, which would also, as I mentioned, take offline their desalination plants, their drinking water. Is that do I have that right? Understand that right?
Yes. If you bomb and knock out the power plants, that those are what serve the desalination plants that make the Middle East survivable.
So, knocking out not only their power but their drinking water. As summer arrives.
Yes, and also Iran then in return threatened that it would also obliterate other Gulf nations' desalination plants. So without water, of course, all of those nations would pretty much collapse. So at that point, I think is when Trump announced his great negotiations.
His backing off? His pretend negotiations. I mean, maybe they're very real, and I'm just totally wrong about that. And Iran is lying when they say that there are no negotiations underway with the U.S. The Iranian official also said Trump's remarks are a retreat from his earlier threats, but Iran's position has not changed. As for the Strait of Hormuz, we affirm that this passage will remain closed to aggressors. So who's telling the truth there? Who can tell? 818-985-5735 if you think you can tell who's lying here. Someone's got to be. Harold in Santa Barbara. Hey, Harold, welcome back to the broadcast, sir. Are you going to march, by the way, on Saturday with No Kings?
Well, I like to keep up with the times. You see, over a year ago, according to our Orthodox on Open App, he says Trump is going to be a saint because of he was saved from assassination. And he's restoring God's will of there is only male and female. So I don't know if I'm going to march for him being king.
No, I actually think it's a march against him being king, Harold.
I got to start learning how to read and listen.
Yeah.
Golly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thanks a lot.
You bet. Thank you, Harold. By the way, the march for him being king in favor of that, that's on Sunday. Am I right about that, Des? That's the Sunday
that
march
makes Mark
in favor
Trump.
Of him being king.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm sure there's going to be lots of takers for that. But yeah. No Kings itself, though, reasserting that America was founded on the idea of no kings, that's on Saturday.
Oh, Saturday.
And
okay.
You can get more information at nokings.org.
Is that right? Or I understand indivisible.com, although is it .com or .org? I don't know. Type in indivisible if you can figure out how to spell it. Robert Mueller, who died on Friday night at 81 years old, served as the director of the Federal Bureau of Investigation under George W. Bush and Barack Obama. He gained National attention for investigating the 2016 Trump campaign's ties to Russia during the president's first term. He also served as a Marine in Vietnam, where he received the Bronze Star for saving a fellow Marine under fire. He was later shot himself and awarded the Purple Heart. After news of Mueller's death broke over the weekend, President of the United States, Donald Trump, took to social media to write, quote, "Robert Mueller just died. Good. I'm glad he's dead." never fails to surprise Democrats and, frankly, any and all decent people. Skewered Trump's remarks in response, quote, "Every day this president shows his basic indecency and unfitness for office," said Democratic California Senator Adam Schiff in response to Trump's statement. Quote, "The cruelty is the point," said Democratic Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer on X. I guess it wasn't crashed, as it has been much of the day on Monday. Schumer went on to say, quote, "Trump's goal is to distract you from rising gas prices, his aimless war," that's a nice way to put it, Chuck, "ICE abuses, and the Epstein files. Don't give him what he wants, and may Robert Mueller, a U.S. Marine and lifelong public servant, rest in peace." Mueller and the president, Congressman Dan Goldman of New York, wrote on X on Saturday, quote, "represent polar opposites of what a public servant should be." Yet the president of the United States disgustingly celebrates Mueller's death simply because he exposed Trump's efforts to steal the 2016 election, said Goldman. At least one Republican also condemned Trump's post, according to Politico, who really should have said only one Republican condemned Trump's post. Quote, "it is clearly wrong and unchristian behavior," said Congressman Don Bacon, Republican of Nebraska, in a text to Politico when he was asked about Trump's statement. "The vast majority of Americans want better." Of course, I believe Don Bacon is not running for the U.S. House once again this November. My apologies to Mr. Bacon if I'm wrong about that, but I think he's on his way out. They got better, it seems, comments from our former presidents. Barack Obama said in a statement on X upon Mueller's passing, quote, "Bob Mueller was one of the finest directors of the history of the FBI, transforming the Bureau after 9/11 and saving countless lives. But it was his relentless commitment to the rule of law and his unwavering belief in our bedrock values that made him one of the most respected public servants of our time. Michelle and I send our condolences to Bob's family and everyone who knew and admired him." Former President George W. Bush said Mueller, quote, "led the agency effectively in the wake of the September 11 terrorist attacks. Laura and I are deeply saddened by the loss of Robert Mueller," he said. "Bob dedicated his life to public service." Contrast that, of course, with our current president, who wrote, "good, I'm glad he's dead." A sentiment that I suspect millions of Americans and folks around the world may be repeating themselves soon enough, if not a moment too soon, but not about Bob Mueller. Let me go to John in Manhattan Beach. Hey, John, welcome to the broadcast, sir.
Hey, welcome. I just want to let you know I have an uncanny way of telling when the president's lying.
Oh, yeah? When is that?
It's when his lips are moving.
Oh, I knew it.
I thought no one would figure that out.
Yeah. You know, I think we live out here in Hollywood. We've got a lot of comedy writers, maybe failed comedy writers out there. I don't know who are calling in. Good to hear from you, John. Are you going to the march on Sunday?
I have to.
Why do you have to?
My wife makes me go.
Your wife makes you go. Well, then you better go, I guess.
I'm going.
Send her our regard and our thanks. And tell
okay.
And have her call in next time, John.
Okay, I will.
All right. Thanks, John. 818-985-5735. Let me go to... Did I do that right? Hang on a second. Hang on. Don't let me screw this up. Morris in Long Beach. First off, Morris. I'm happy to say I've got more, slightly more, but more than the 30 seconds I usually give you on a good day. So before you tell me what you called in to tell me, let me ask you, are you going out to the No Kings rallies on Saturday?
I got to check with my wife first. You know, she's driving the bus badly, but if it's okay with her, of course I'm going to be there.
Okay. All right. And does Mrs. Morris ever call in the radio shows?
No, she's Mrs. Morris is employed. I'm retired. So, you know, she's spending her time paying some bills, Bradley.
Oh, she's actually working. I see. All right. And what did you call in to share with us today, Mr. Moe? Always good to hear from you, my friend. What's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to give a shout-out to Taco Trump. His bravado, his hit a wall. You notice he backed off on that ultimatum. That's because the Iranians are driving the bus, Bradley. And I'm going to share something with you real quick. Like, racism has always been Trump's glue, but cruelty has always been his objective. Mm. And when Trump dies, people are going to spit on his grave, Bradley. I'll talk to you.
Thank you, Mo. Mo hung up on himself. I can't even follow him up with questions.
Well, remember that when Joe Biden was elected in 2020, that once that was declared, that people went out dancing in the streets. I don't know if people remember that.
About Joe Biden
winning and Trump no longer being president. That caused people to spontaneously go out and dance in the streets. So when Trump is no longer president again, I wonder if we'll see a similar reaction.
And you know, I would never say good. I'm glad he's dead. If that happens at any point, I'm sure it'll happen at some point to Donald Trump. But I would never say, good, I'm glad he's dead, except for the way that he speaks about others. So we will see when it happens. And I think we're going to be off for spring break next week. So we'll see if it happens while we're gone. But the idea that anyone would say, frankly, about virtually anyone, good, I'm glad he's dead, much less the president of the United States, about a guy who served for decades, you know, could have made a lot of money as an attorney in the private sector, chose to stay in public service, stay in government for decades, ran the FBI, respected by parties, Republican and Democratic alike, comes back from retirement to run this idiotic special counsel's investigation into Donald Trump. The investigation wasn't idiotic. What they had to investigate was idiotic. A guy who, you know, a decorated war hero from Vietnam, that you would turn around, a president of the United States would turn around and say, good, I'm glad he's dead. There is no bottom for this guy. We'll see if we ever get there. Anyway, all right, got to get out. Thanks again to everyone who rang in. Thanks to John Bergmeier of publicknowledge.org, to our producer, Desi Doyen, to our board operator, Will, and to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's program, you can download it anytime for free at bradblog.com. Don't forget to drop me an email. Love to hear from you. I am bradcast@bradblog.com, and you'll find me on the social medias, especially Blue Sky at the Brad Blog. See you there. Until we see you all here, hopefully tomorrow, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
You're listening to the Bradcast. We are 100% listener supported, thanks to listeners like you who drop by bradblog.com/donate.